We are very pleased to announce the full lineup for our Coffee House Shots live event on the 26th of February at the Emmanuel Centre in Westminster. Join Coffee House Shots regulars Michael Gove, Casey Balls, Kate Andrews, as well as very special guests Robert Jenrick and Jonathan Ashworth for a look to the year ahead. They will be tackling such questions as, can the Chancellor reframe the budget in her first spring statement? What will Trump's first 100 days look like? And will reform cause an upset at the local elections? So that's Emmanuel Centre, 7:30, 26th of February. And for tickets, go to spectator.co.uk/coffeehouselive. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hello and welcome to this special Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm James Heal and I'm joined today by Michael Forsyth, Minister under Margaret Thatcher and John Major, and finally Secretary of State for Scotland at the end of that last government. Now, we're joined today by Michael because it's 50 years this week since Margaret Thatcher was elected leader of the Conservative Party. It's a big year for anniversaries. It's also the centenary since her birth. Michael, welcome to the podcast. Just wanted to ask, first of all, what do you think Margaret Thatcher would make of politics today if she were leader of the Conservative Party now?
I think she'd be pretty appalled, actually. She was very much someone who was very careful in deciding policy. She was very careful in how she made her speeches. The idea that politics was about slogans on Twitter, she would have found that very difficult to understand. And a lot of people, I think, don't realise that when she became leader of the Conservative Party 50 years ago, a huge amount of work had gone into working out exactly how we would save the country, because that's what we did. I believe she saved Britain from the disastrous position that it got into in 1975. And people like Keith Joseph and Nick Ridley had done a lot of thinking, and she'd brought in a number of intellectuals, and she was engaged with people like Friedrich Hayek and Milton Friedman. And so she had a clear idea of where she wanted to go. But she also had that very unusual thing in politics, which is someone with clarity and vision, but at the same time, a degree of pragmatism. So she had a map and a compass, and she wouldn't always go in a straight line to reach her destination.
And in terms of Thatcherism itself as a sort of political creed, I mean, how much do you think that would need sort of reevaluating from the challenges of the 1970s and 80s to now? Obviously, the specifics are very different, but you look around the world and you look, for instance, at what's happening in America with Donald Trump's embrace of protectionism. You look here at home where the rule of law is perhaps coming, according to some Thatcherites, to resemble more the rule of lawyers. What do you think she would make in terms of the big thinking, in terms of updating her philosophy for the modern age?
I don't think she was that sort of person. She didn't update her philosophy for the modern age. She was brought up as a Methodist. She had firm convictions and enormous courage. She believed in personal responsibility. She believed in limiting the size of the state. She believed in allowing people to spend their own money because she thought that they would do that more wisely than any government could achieve. She believed in rewarding hard work. She believed in the property-owning democracy. She would be appalled by crony capitalism, which we see on a huge scale. I mean, that's one of the things that's completely distinctive about her, was that she didn't adjust her core beliefs and politics to suit whatever the prevailing wind was at the time.
What do you think are the lessons then we can draw from her in terms of the politics of today? Obviously, you know, 50 years on, the shadow cabinet currently is perhaps a bit smaller than it was back then. The number of Tory MPs is now only 121, the worst ever defeat in the party's history. What do you think Conservative MPs who are looking to Margaret Thatcher, many of them would have come into politics because of her, what do you think they ought to draw from her in terms of inspiration and kind of practical lessons? You've mentioned before about the importance of think tanks. Would you suggest going away and doing the kind of reading to kind of think about what we need to do to take Britain back to the path of prosperity?
I think one of the things she was very keen on repeating over and over again was that the facts of life are conservative. So in terms of tackling big problems, and there are many of them, like social care or the health service or the issues that arise from integration and immigration, all of these things, obviously they need careful assessment. And I think, for example, when Kemi Badenoch is refusing to give off-the-cuff policy pronouncements, she's following in Margaret Thatcher's wake. I mean, whenever you had a meeting with Margaret, invariably, the first question she would ask is, what are the facts? And then how do we move forward and adjust our position to meet this particular problem? And certainly all the time I was in government for 10 years, even after Margaret had gone. If I was doing an interview with a journalist about anything under the sun, with my responsibilities, I knew exactly what to say because there was a coherent philosophy and a coherent strategy towards solving our country's problems. And we could finish each other's sentences in cabinet as a result. We didn't need a bunch of spads sending out lines for us to take, and we could be trusted to make our own speeches without some spad in number 10 going over them to see if they were in line with the line. And she encouraged people to engage in the battle of ideas. I mean, the only thing is with Margaret is she worked out what she thought by argument. Some people find that very difficult. I mean, sometimes the arguments could be a bit bruising, but that's how she worked out what she wanted. I mean, I remember having a huge discussion with one or two other young Turks in the No Turning Back group about the idea that we should allow schools to run their own affairs and that they should be some self-governing. And at the end of the discussion, she said, "I think you should all grow up." And then the next day, she put out a note saying that let's develop this idea.
And I wonder, in terms of her legacy, she's obviously very contested on the right now. There's a rival party in Reform. This week, Nigel Farage claimed that Margaret Thatcher, a young Margaret Thatcher, would join Reform and be a reformer. Just, Michael, as someone who knew her very well, both before her time as Prime Minister, during it and after for many years, what do you make of that claim?
I think it's typical Nigel. It's complete nonsense. She'd have contempt for Reform. She didn't like people who said that they would do things without having any clue as to how they would be achieved. She believed in living within your means, so making promises to reduce the waiting list in the NHS to zero without actually having any indication of how that was achieved. His contempt for Parliament, she revered Parliament. She took the House of Lords very seriously. In the latter days, I used to look after her in the Lords because she was worried. She had a short-term memory issue, which became progressively worse. She was worried about letting the side down. She didn't vote in the House of Lords, but when she went there, it was like the parting of the Red Sea. I mean, she was held in such respect. If you walked down a corridor, everybody stood to the side, and she felt that she should be there. And when I said to her, "Margaret, you know, you don't need to come here quite as often as you do," she turned on me and she said, "Michael, when we were appointed to this place, it became our duty to be here. Now, how often are you here when I'm not here?" So she was very devoted to our constitutional system of constituency MPs. She understood the importance of members for particular constituencies. Farage wants to have proportional representation. She did not like people who had no respect for the rule of law. So she would not have a lot of sympathy with someone like Farage, who's linked himself so closely to Donald Trump, who certainly doesn't show any of the characteristics which Margaret would have thought was important in a politician. Respect for the rule of law, respect for other countries' boundaries, respect for the importance of free trade, and for free markets.
And also, after leaving office in 1990, she still did an immense amount for the party as well, and clearly cared very deeply about its future survival as the Conservative Party.
Yeah, she used to come and stay with us in Scotland. I mean, I have to say it was a great honour to have her, but it was absolutely exhausting. I mean, she was completely driven. You sat down for a cup of tea, she would say, "Now, can we form a group to help to win the next election? Or what can we do about this, that and the other, which will help the party to raise funds?" No, she was driven. And I mean, one of the sadnesses actually about Margaret was that her whole life in politics was about politics. And I don't know that many people realise that she had great affection, for example, for the arts and the theatre and many things that she gave up because of her dedication. I mean, she worked long hours and was absolutely on top of the detail. John Major sent me to talk to her because she was holding drinks parties for backbenchers and telling them the Maastricht Treaty was not a very good idea. And John Major was getting more and more cross. And he said, "You go and talk to her and tell her, you know, that we can't put up with this and we're going to have to start briefing against her if this goes on." Mm. So I rang her up and I said, "Can I come and talk to you about the Maastricht Treaty, Margaret?" And she said, "Yeah, come next Wednesday." So I turned up and she had the whole treaty all annotated and asked me which section of the treaty would you like to discuss. And that's, you know, that's after she left office, obviously. And I said, well, the thing is, Margaret, I don't really want to talk about the treaty. You've been doing these drinks parties. It's upsetting the party machine. They're going to start having a go at you, and you don't need that. At this point, there was a thermonuclear explosion. And I can remember her screaming at me, Michael, how dare you use that argument on me? How dare you? Don't you realize that if I'd ever cared about me, we would never have achieved any of the things that we've done for our country? And I remember crawling under the door thinking, what an idiot you are, Forsyth. Whatever made you think that you should use an argument like her? It was her secret weapon. She didn't care about herself. She had no ego in that sense, but she really cared about her country. And that's why she was able to do things which I don't think many politicians would do. For her, sending a task force for the Falklands was absolutely a no-brainer, because it was about maintaining the rule of law. It was about maintaining the sovereignty of the people of the Falkland Islands. And people might say to her, but you do realize if this goes wrong, you'll be driven from office and the government will fall. They could say to her, this might not work, this is very high risk. But as far as she was concerned, she had to do what was right and to defend the rule of law. Now, I don't see many people on the international stage who think like that. And if you look at, for example, what is happening now with Trump and Putin, they're lucky she's not around, because I think they would both be getting something of a blasting from Margaret Thatcher. Putin for being the dictator and aggressive dictator that he is, and Trump for thinking that you can just ignore the breach of human rights and the breach of law and order, which we have seen in the Ukraine, or the losses of lives, people defending their liberty in their country.
Well, that's a terrific answer, Michael. I mean, just as a final question, I mean, we're going to have a huge amount of focus on Mrs. Thatcher's legacy this year, lots of discussion. You'll have seen, obviously, a huge amount of that over the past 35 years or so since she left office. And even during office, there was the sort of, there was a degree of myth-making, and there was a degree of sort of false narrative put about her that, for instance, as we've discussed, she didn't care about the arts. I mean, what do you think are the kind of big misconceptions when we talk about the legacy of Mrs. Thatcher that you would like to address here? I mean, what do you think that we're going to hear a lot about this year, which gives a sort of false narrative about her?
The left will never forgive her, because they created Tony Blair and New Labour as a result of a response to her social market policies. The defeat of the irresponsible power by the trade unions, that when she became leader, trade union leaders, I remember getting involved in politics, and the Times and others were saying that no one would be able to govern without the support and consent of the trade union movement. Trade unions, through the closed shop, were able to destroy people's livelihoods and take away their jobs if they stepped out of line. She had some tough things to do. Scargill was leading the miners, refusing to have a vote. It was a brutal period. She had to deal with the hunger strike and the IRA terrorists. And her strength and her resolve led people to think that she was uncaring. Her determination to get public expenditure under control and to ensure that people and the country live within their means. All of these things were used by the left to present her as uncaring. I remember being told by a conservative peer that when her husband died and Margaret was prime minister, the very first letter of condolence, this was Jill Knight, the very first letter of condolence she got handwritten was from Margaret Thatcher. She was a tough lady, but she also had a heart of gold.
Well, Michael Forsyth, thank you very much for joining us on Coffee House Shots today.